Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an X-Tuesday episode. Today, we're going to be talking about Uncanny X-Men number 15. This is from 2019. It's written by Matthew Rosenberg. We have art by Salvador La Roca, colors by Guru EFX, and letters by Joe Caramagna. So we saw at the end of issue 14, Captain America showed up at Harry's bar unexpectedly. And this issue literally picks up just seconds after that, after Cyclops had opened the door, and they have a conversation. Meanwhile, down in the basement of Harry's hideaway, Dark Beast has spilled something, and Shan is helping him clean up. But you can tell right away just by the language that Dark Beast is using. Oh, heavens, I ruin everything. I'm all thumbs. I'm afraid. And, you know, Shan, she's got that transmode virus that's literally Warlock, who, let's face it, was always a very naive character. And being that she's kind of infected with part of Warlock, you can see why she would take on some of that naive personality. And so not sure what Dark Beast is up to right here, but it's clear just from the way he's talking that he's got something going on, right? Like, oh, heavens, and I'm all thumbs. I mean, come on, nobody actually talks like that. But Shan does offer, you know, she's the one that's supposed to be guarding Dark Beast, keeping an eye on him and warning the other X-Men if anything's going on. So she says, let self-help, and Beast is trying to bond with her, I guess, or, you know, she's got something going on, some ulterior motive. And he says, Shan, can I ask you a question? Like, I don't mean to pry, but maybe it's your alien infection is how he calls it, but I sense a sadness in you. And Shan says, well, I don't experience emotions, you know, not like I did before. If there's anything that I feel, it's guilt, because the Warlock part of her had to betray the, you know, rest of the New Mutants in order to survive and infect them. And so Dark Beast says, well, if you feel so guilty, why don't you leave? And she said, go where? Like, I would die on my own, basically. So my ex-friends are being merciful by letting me stay. And then Beast, you know, kind of reveals that he's got a plan and says, what if I could help? I'd love to try. So, yeah, you know, he's got some diabolical plan, and I'm sure it's to his benefit, or maybe it's just his curiosity, which rises to the level that he doesn't care about anything but his experiments, even if it hurts other people. So meanwhile, upstairs, Captain America standing at the door, and Cyclops doesn't want to have anything to do with him. Like, I think you got the wrong door, because I can't imagine why you'd be here. And he tells the rest of the X-Men to give him a minute. And Alex says, I'm staying. He goes, nah, Alex, that's not necessary. Logan, you stay. Alex is like, well, wait a minute. If he stays, I stay. So Captain America is trying to kind of defuse the situation. He goes, look, I know we haven't always agreed on you know, things, but I've got a lot of respect for you and the X-Men. And Cyclops is like, I don't want to hear it. You got something to say, say it. And Captain America expresses his concerns. Like, I don't know what you're doing, but I know you can't keep doing it. And Cyclops is like, you know, with all due respect, Steve, you're not my captain. And we're well past the days when you can try to tell me what to do. And Captain America's like, hold on, you know, I'm trying to help you. And I you know, heard through the grapevine you're working with Valerie Cooper. You can't trust her. And he puts his hand on Cyclops' shoulder. And I love it. Cyclops just looks at his hand. Steve's like, oh, yeah, this is a different Cyclops than you're used to talking to, Steve. This is, you know, he's done. Scott is done. He's here for one last go round. He wants to take care of those names on the list, and he's not going to be glad-handed, I guess you'd say. So as Captain America is telling him, hey, you can't trust her, and he's, oh, but we can trust you. And Captain America's like, hey, some of the people you consider friends are not friends. And Scott's like, hey, we're the only friends we've got, you know, and that doesn't include you. And so Steve, he tries to take a different tack. Like, look, I know you're taking prisoners, and no offense, but this bar is not exactly the raft. It's not safe for you to keep them here. I want to help you. I know things are bad for mutants, and I know you should be looking out for the mutant community for solutions first, but I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just trying to help. And if you want my help, I'll offer a suggestion. Like, be discreet. Don't do these things in the public eye. And Cyclops like, you know what? It's not our fault that people are afraid of who we are. And Steve seems to agree with him, but he says, you know what? But it is your fault if they're afraid of being in the streets during one of your fights and somebody gets killed. So he gives him his card and he says, look, I can't be seen helping you, but if you need my help, here's how you can reach me. That's my offer. Take it or leave it. I'll understand either way. And he says, bye. And he leaves. And Logan says, what with the strong silent play I see? He's like, well, too much? Nah, it always worked for me. So Scott asks him, well, what do you think? And Wolverine's like, what, you're actually asking my opinion? He goes, yeah, I'm trying something new. And you know him better than I do. And Wolverine says, well, he's right about one thing. We shouldn't trust anyone, including him. So before they can say more, Jamie Madrox shows up and says, sorry to interrupt. We just got a text on Reaper's phone. It's Hope. Her MLF just picked their next target. So the X-Men head out the next day. And they're at some sort of rally. And Jono's there. And he's got his, you know, mouth wrapped up, as he usually does, to keep it contained. And right away, they're accosted by the crowd. Hey, get out of here. You're not welcome. Mutie freaks. And Jono's like, just get lost, loser. And the guy's not having it. He's like, no, go back where you came from. And Jono's like, I'm not thrilled about being here myself. And he punches him. And Cyclops is like, damn it, Jono, we're not here to cause trouble. And he says, I am. You smash bigots every chance you get. He's like, let's go. Let's just get out of here. We're trying to keep a low profile. We don't need to be causing a riot at a political rally again. So Hope's going to be around here somewhere. Just keep an eye out. And all of a sudden, they hear a voice yell out, no peace without equality. And they suit up, they, you know, kind of don their, Cyclops dons his visor, and Jono takes off the cloth covering his mouth. Ileana pulls out her sword, and they're face to face with the members of the MLF. And they say, oh, good, the traitors are here. And Scott's like, you guys need to stand down. And their response is, oh, you X-Men, you're always the puppet of the human elite. You know, you just refuse to shake off their leech. We're on the edge of extinction here. And you keep doing the human's bidding. So meanwhile, the girl or a woman that was there to speak at the Humanity for Humans rally is ushered off stage, and the X-Men and the MLF start to fight. Meanwhile, Scott's like, where's Hope or Banshee? You know, they're the ones that we're really looking for here. Anybody have a visual on them? And Jamie says, well, Banshee's flying overhead. And so Scott says, magic, get me up there. And she opens a little doorway for him. He jumps through, and he's on a rooftop of an adjoining building. And he says, Hope, Sean, we have to talk. Hope's not hearing it. Sure thing, Grandpa. Just let me take care of one thing first. And Scott's like, I can't let you do that. And so Banshee gets ready to start screaming, and Hope stops him, saying, no, Banshee. And Scott says, look, I know you're hurting. Cable wasn't. It's like, no, you don't even get to say his name, right? Now you want to talk about him? No, you have no right. Scott's like, what do you mean? He was my son. And Hope says, you know, it's a funny thing, isn't it? You don't realize how little family means until you lose a part of it. And even though you failed him, he might have been your son. He was definitely my father. And I failed, and now he's gone. And you know what that makes us? Nothing. It makes us nothing. And Scott tries again, like, I get it. I get why you're here. The X-Men failed. And she's like, no, you don't get it. Everyone failed. And we should have listened to Cable. And now he's gone, and the X-Men is gone, and war is coming. But he made me a soldier. And you know what a soldier's job is? To end wars. And I didn't start this war, but I'm sure as hell going to end it. So she sends Banshee off. Scott fires at him and kind of knocks him down. Hope pulls a gun on him and says, you know what? You're the Summers who came back from the dead. And that's how I know that the universe doesn't care about me. You know, she wants it to have been Cable. And Cyclops says, look, put the gun down. It's not too late. We can work together. And meanwhile, we see Wolverine appearing on the roof behind her. Magic has opened a doorway for him as well. And Hope says, you know what? You came back so soft, Scott. And this world, it doesn't have a place for soft anymore. So Wolverine starts to attack her because she's, you know, holding that gun on Scott. And as he takes a swipe at her, the gun goes off and it hits Scott right in the visor. And Wolverine's, he's furious. He's got his claws right in Hope's neck. Like, you can see the skin being indented by the claws. And Wolverine tells her, "You're going to die for that." And she says, "Wait, Logan, you forgot." He's like, "Forgot what?" She said, "You forgot who the hell I am." And she borrows Cyclops' optic blast and blasts Wolverine. And his smoking body's left laying over there next to Scott. And she says, "Thanks for letting me borrow your powers, Grandpa." And she goes, she picks up the sniper rifle and she manages to shoot the woman who was about to give the speech, the Humans for Humanity rally, right before she gets into the car. And just as she puts the sniper rifle down, we see Wolverine's claws kind of pop through her chest as he stabbed her from behind. And she says, "You know what? You were too slow." And he says, "You know what? I didn't care about that politician. This is for what you did to Cyclops. Any last words?" And her response is, "La revolution quand Saturne devour ses propres enfants," which is a very famous quote, which means the revolution, like Saturn, devours all its infants or all its children. So I'll talk about that at the end, what that means, and kind of about this characterization of Hope that that Matthew Rosenberg is giving us. And Wolverine, you know, he's been around forever. He's heard the quote many times, I'm sure. He says, "Well, that works for me, you pretentious little," and he lifts her up with his claws and he's about to throw her off the roof when Scott kind of recovers and says, "Logan, don't." And then passes out. So we're back at Harry's hideaway. It's 6 days later. Scott's waking up from a coma that he's been in, and Dark Beast is saying, whoa, easy, easy, don't get up. Can't have my prize patient overdoing it. And so Scott's asking what happened. And Dark Beast says, "Well, you're fine, but your nom de guerre is slightly more appropriate than before, I'm afraid." And he says, "My eye?" She's like, "Yep, your lovely granddaughter shot it right out of your head. And it's quite miraculous that I was able to save you. No need to thank me, just an X-Men doing my duty." And as he says that, Alex comes walking in saying, "Hey, you're not supposed to be in here by yourself, McCoy." He goes, "Oh, quite right. I just thought I heard our star patient call me, but I'll leave you two to talk." And Alex, you know, very suspicious of Dark Beast, says, "Whatever." So Scott's asking, "Okay, so what's been going on? I've been unconscious for a few days." And he says, "Well, he saved your life." And Scott's like, "Yeah, and you should be nicer to him." Like, "Should I?" Because he kept arguing that we should let him give you a robotic tongue. And Scott actually feels his tongue to make sure it's his normal tongue and says, "Well, I'm glad you didn't." And Alex says, "Well, I thought about it." But meanwhile, Hope's in the other room, but just relax. And as Scott tries to stand up, he's like, "Look, everything's under control. You're not the only, you know, ex-leader in this bar." And it's like, how is she? "Well, Hope, Wolverine diced her up pretty good, but she seems to have barred his healing factor. So she's not dead. She seems like she's tough. Got a lot of Nathan in her. The rest of the MLF is locked up. Basement's getting very crowded. We didn't bring Banshee. We just left him on the roof." And Cyclops says, "Okay, are Danny and Shan watching him?" It's like, "Yeah, about them." And Cyclops is like, "What?" And Alex's response is, "Well, it seems like your pal Dark Beast convinced him to let him run some experiments." And Scott flips out, immediately runs after Dark Beast, grabs him by the neck, like, "You don't ever touch them. What did you do?" And Beast, you know, knows who he's talking about, but he plays kind of innocent. "Oh, I don't know who you're referring to." And Scott starts to get mad. You see his one good eye start to glow, saying, "They've been through enough, you freak," when all of a sudden he doubles over in pain. And Dark Beast is like, "Yeah, I should have mentioned that. Your skull's barely holding together right now. With your eye beams constantly firing, you're running the risk of blowing your own head off. And if you really increase focus and intensity like that, the risk becomes a likelihood. So you touch me again." And before he can finish the threat, Alex is there backing up his brother and grabs Dark Beast by the hair and has his hand next to his head and goes, "You'll do what exactly?" And Beast doesn't even respond. So we do then see Danny Moonstar show up. along with Ileana and Rain and Shan. And Scott can hear it in her voice, how she sounds different. And he says, "Danny, you're you." And Danny says, "Yeah, I am. And Ileana is, and Shan is, and Rain is. Like, we're good." So Scott gives her a big hug, like, "Welcome back. I missed you." He's like, "Scott, I was here before. I was just, you know, a little different." And Scott's got a smile on his face, like, "That goes for all of you. It's so good to see you guys." And Danny's like, "Yeah, it's hard to believe, but McCoy saved us." And Scott's like, "Oh, so the transmode virus is gone? I didn't think that was possible." And the Beast interrupts and says, "Well, it wasn't really a virus. It was more like a parasite, and it can feed off a host, or it can be like a symbiotic relationship. And this parasite, it didn't just come from Warlock. It was Warlock, right? And so he divided himself and spread himself over multiple hosts, so he wouldn't consume any one of them, because if he just infected one, then he eventually would have taken them over completely. So you think of it like a compassionate infection. But luckily I found one host who could be the complete host, and he would eventually be completely consumed. And with a few chemical enticements, we lured Warlock out of these new mutants and got him in the other host. And Scott's like, "Well, what do you mean true host?" And of course, it's Jamie Madrox once again playing the guinea pig. And Jamie says, "Yeah, he means me." And Beast is like, "Yeah, once again, our dear friend Jamie proves himself a scientific wonder." And we see one of Jamie's duplicates there saying, "Hello, friend, please kill me." And that's how the issue ends. So not exactly a humane decision. And crappy for Jamie and the dupe, which, I mean, Jamie's dupes are always, it's you try not to think about it too much because it's so morally wrong. You know, Jamie will dupe himself, and that's like an actual person in a way, but he'll do it knowing that they're going to die or sacrificing them. And, you know, I know he tries not to always do that, but they know that this dupe is going to die, that Warlock's eventually going to completely consume this host and need another dupe. So I guess short-term solution, but not the best solution, and certainly not moral. It's definitely in the gray area. So you know why Dark Beast would go for it. So, you know, going back to the first couple pages of the issue, we totally see what he had probably had planned right from the beginning, knowing this is going to stir the pot and cause kind of drama and you know, questions about right and wrong and that sort of thing. And then there's the other part of Dark Beast that just likes to experiment and do things, you know? So I'm sure it was quote unquote fun for him. So interesting issue, not a whole lot of action. You know, we just have the one fight, and it's pretty brutal seeing the X-Men fight, you know, amongst themselves. Scott losing his eyes, obviously problematic. And if he can even use his powers again, we'll have to see. Shows just how powerful, a reminder of how powerful Hope is. She, you know, takes Scott's powers and blasts Wolverine. The big takeaway for me is the characterization of Hope. When I first read it, I was like, "Man, this kind of seems out of character for her." You know, obviously she's hurting now that Cable's gone. We did have that that special that came out. I think it was an extermination special. But anyway, I can't remember if that's what it was called, but it was a one-shot special that had Hope and Jean Grey. It had some other stories too. There were multiple stories in it. One of them was like Summer's family, you know, way back in the day. And then the Hope and Jean story was them going around to Cable's safe houses and sort of making sure that there was no weapons or anything that could fall into the wrong hands. And it was a cathartic moment with, you know, Cable's daughter and Cable's mother, and they kind of bonded over it. And it was clear there was still pain there, but it seemed like Jean was able to help Hope sort of come to terms with the loss of Cable with Nathan Summers. And so I kind of thought, well, now we're going backwards. You know, here's Hope with the MLF, like shooting a human in the back of the head with a sniper rifle. And it doesn't really seem to be the Hope Summers that I know. Nothing heroic about that. You know, that's something, you know, Magneto would do, maybe even, you know, further down the path than Magneto would go. You know, he would at least face the person, you know. So I kind of wondered about it. I'm like, I don't know that this is a good characterization from Matthew Rosenberg on Hope. But then as I've read it and time has gone on and I've read it more than once, I've kind of come around to thinking, well, there's another aspect of this that I kind of forgot when I read it the first time. And that's, so yeah, maybe Hope had come to terms with losing Nathan or was working on coming to terms with losing Cable. But then she loses everybody, right? I mean, there's very few X-Men left with what happened at the X-Men, at the end of X-Men Disassembled, when everybody disappeared. Like, there's hardly any of them left. So, you know, she's still trying to deal with the loss of Cable when almost every mutant she knows, you know, every one of the X-Men disappears. So in my mind, the way I've kind of reconciled is that, you know, that must have just pushed her over the edge, kind of broken something inside her where she's just like, I'm not doing this anymore. Whatever it takes to keep mutants safe, you know, who's ever left, she's going to cross any line. She's going to burn any bridge. She's going to do whatever it takes. She's just had it. She's been pushed past her breaking point. So that's kind of how I took it. I'll kind of, next time I talk to Matthew Rosenberg, I'd like to ask him about it, because it is sort of interesting that she's so militant. I haven't seen her like this before. Maybe that's just me not having read a lot of Hope Summers, that you know, that she had this in her before, and I'm not realizing it. As far as the quote she says about, you know, the revolution is like Saturn, and it eats its own children. It's a very famous quote, like I said, from a French philosopher. And basically what it means is, when you talk about a revolution eating its children, so children of a revolution, they're the ones that believe in the revolution. You know, they've been birthed by the revolution. They're soldiers in the revolution. So think of it as, I don't know, let's take the American Revolution for example, right? The children of the revolution would be the citizens of the American colonies who rose up to revolt against England, right? They are the children of the revolution. But the revolution itself, the American Revolution itself, it consumed them in as much as they succeeded, and then you become the thing that you were fighting against, right? So not that you do things exactly the same way, but in that example, England and their rule is quote unquote the establishment, and the citizens of America, the colonies, were the revolutionaries. So you're the radicals, right? You're the ones seeking change. And you do whatever it takes. And so in that example, the American colonists, they overthrow the establishment. And then what do? Well, now that you have overthrown whatever the establishment was, by its very definition, you then have to establish something, you know, a new way of doing things, but it's still an establishment. So you know, you can't always revolt. Like, it's not a never ending cycle, right? Like, you were a revolutionary, you succeeded in defeating your opponent. You don't then revolt again because you've already won, right? So it's that whole cycle. And so that's what Hope is trying to say. Like, at one time, Cyclops and Wolverine and, you know, all of them, they were the revolutionaries. They were the ones fighting. And now she's saying, you guys have become part of the establishment. You know, you're part of the old way. And it's important for the younger generation, like Hope herself, to continue to revolt. So that, you know, she's kind of insulting them in a way. At least that's how I took it. Something else I'd ask Matthew Rosenberg if I got a chance to talk to him, or when I get a chance to talk to him. So, but anyway, the art is solid. You know, it's Salvador LaRocca art. There's several scenes in here that are just brutal. Seeing Wolverine stand up after he's been burned with Cyclops's optic blast that Hope borrowed is brutal. He doesn't even have any eyes. He's all burnt and he looks pretty savage. And yeah, seeing the claws popped through, Hope is pretty brutal as well. The way Salvador Lorca draws Banshee, who, you know, at this point is still infected with the, what is it, the death seed, or he's almost like a zombie, very emaciated and thin. That all works really well. So, yeah, really, really solid art. I know some people don't care much for Salvador LaRocca's art. It can be a little stiff at times, but I'm a fan. And Guru EFX, his colors are, they're not, I wouldn't say all the way over in the primary area, which, you know, you want for a superhero comic because it gives it that real bright, action-y feel that you want superhero comics to be. But it's about 90% there, which I think is perfect for the kind of tone that Rosenberg is trying to set, where, you know, things aren't going great for the X-Men. They're putting up with a lot. They're going through a lot. But the biggest takeaway is something I talked about during the last issue 14, which is with the dynamics of the characters, and we see it here with Banshee and Hope, you know, working with the MLF, and the other dynamics with Scott and his brother at the beginning with Captain America and Scott and Logan and Alex. This book and this story are so much about the relationships, even more so than like the plot or the story beats. You know, it's about relationships. And in that way, just like I said last time, it reminds me so much of the classic Chris Claremont era, where it's relationships first. It's like this big superhero soap opera, and you can't wait to see what happens next. It's very compelling, not because I want to know, well, our Scott and Logan and the rest of this ragtag team of X-Men, are they going to be able to cross all the names off the list that Scott has made, and, you know, take care of everybody they need to take care of, Strife and the MLF and the Marauders and, you know, everybody else on the list. That's not what interests me. What interests me is how are they going to try to cross everybody off the list in terms of, can they keep it together? Like, as they go on this mission to cross everybody off the list, what are the character dynamics going to be like? Are they going to be able to bring Hope and Banshee over to their side? Is Scott going to be able to maintain control of the team? Is Dark Beast going to become part of the team? How is his relationship with the rest of the X-Men going to evolve now that he's supposedly helped these new mutants? It's the relationship and seeing how the relationships play out that make it compelling, not necessarily, okay, let's see if they can cross everybody off their list. So yeah, I mean, you're curious about what happens, but more than being curious about what happens, I'm more curious about how what happens affects the relationships of everybody. So I think that's the strength of the book, which again, in my mind, harkens back to the classic Chris Claremont era, because as much as it was sort of formative in terms of adding concepts and characters and whatnot to the Marvel Universe, it also was about how what happened affected the characters. You know, how did the supposed death of Jean Grey affect the characters? Well, Cyclops left the team. You know, how did, you know, various events, you know, affect the X-Men, rather than, you know, how did the various events affect the next event or affect the evolution of the team or the title? It was more about how the events and the ideologies and whatnot affected the characters. So for me, that's what was best about the Claremont era, and that's what's best about this Rosenberg era. And, you know, we have started going through the House of X and Powers of X stuff, and I've talked about it in some of those episodes. You know, what we didn't know at the time that this first started coming out, this Rosenberg era, we didn't know, but Matthew did, Matthew already knew that this was finite, right? He could kind of tell whatever story he wanted, because he knew everything was going to get reset when House of X and Powers of X started up. So it really allowed him to do a lot of really cool things. And I can't remember who I was talking to, but somebody recently was like, yeah, it was almost like X-Men fan fiction, you know, because Matthew is such a huge fan of the X-Men. So for him to be able to just, okay, sky's the limit. I can tell any story that I want to tell, obviously within reason, and you know, he couldn't use all the characters because they were still doing the Age of X-Men stuff. But for him to be able to just pull from his, favorite era of X-Men and do things like kill people off or bring people back or just tell the X-Men story that he wanted to tell. Sometimes when you have that chance, it can be sort of intimidating. It's like, man, I've gotten what I've always wanted. And then you kind of get stage fright and, or you're worried that you're not going to deliver or live up to. Man, I think you nailed it. I really, really do. So, anyway, that's going to do it for this, this episode. Hope you guys all enjoyed hearing me ramble about, Uncanny X-Men number 15. So I want to thank you all for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.